With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning and Merry Christmas to you. Thank you all for joining us today on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, a coalition calls on Governor Newsom to address supply chain challenges. But we have a lot of fun holiday stories for you today in our lineup, including this one from Gary Crawford.
Most of us associate this time of year with, sleigh bells or jingle bells, but some of our farmers associate it with, even if they haven't used a cowbell in 30 years. Of course, we're talking about our dairy producers, some of which have been told more than once they were crazy to get into the dairy business in the first place.
Sometimes I think I'm crazy.
Ken Smith, dairyman from Remington, Virginia, he says Christmas Day around his place is actually crazy, or to use his word,
fragmented. You get about 6 hours with your family, and the rest of the help get about 6 hours. And everybody comes together to make sure the work gets done.
Work. The cows have to be milked and fed on Christmas Day, just like any other day. So on Christmas Day, in order to let the Smith family have some time and the other workers to have part of the day also,
we have to reach out and help everybody else.
That's the spirit. But Ken may get a really rare, important gift this year after 40 years in the business.
We're really close to the break-even point.
Right.
Crazy.
Crazy. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Eligible organizations now have until February 2nd to apply for funding from the first round of USDA's new Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. Rod Bain reports.
The notice is official. Funding applications are now being accepted for USDA's new Regional Agricultural Promotion Program.
We are announcing specifically the first $300 million of that tranche to be allocated. And the conditions that we've placed on the first $300 million is that they can be invested anywhere but in the top four agricultural markets.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack made that announcement as part of the recent meeting of the White House Export Council, which the secretary serves as a member. The $300 million tranche is part of a total $1.2 billion five-year funding availability from the Commodity Credit Corporation.
To expand opportunities to diversify our reach. The sad reality for American agriculture is that we've put too much emphasis on a handful of markets in terms of agricultural exports. Roughly, our top four or five markets basically are responsible for nearly 60% of our exports. And so we believe it's important and necessary for us to figure out ways in which we can expand the number of market opportunities and increase our commitment to those that are not in the top four or five.
Eligible applicants of RAP funding include nonprofit U.S. ag trade organizations and state regional trade groups, U.S. agricultural cooperatives, and state agencies involved in approved farm and food export market development activities.
About $1.1 billion is going to be utilized to expand assistance to our cooperators to be able to go out in these new market opportunities and to invest and to provide promotions and presence to encourage American agriculture opportunities there.
Special emphasis on this first tranche of funding will be ag export market establishment, expansion, and promotion in the regions of Africa, Latin America and the Caribbean, and Southeast Asia. Likewise, those markets not eligible for focused RAP projects include China, Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. The secretary does explain one exception to the list of top export markets ineligible for RAP-funded efforts.
We did not exclude Japan just simply because we saw a significant decline in market share in Japan, so we want to make sure that we are stepping up our game in a place where we think there's opportunity.
Applications are due by February 2nd, with additional information on RAP funding available at grants.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you just want to get the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. Just search for the AgNet News Hour on your favorite podcast downloading app. You are listening to the AgNet News Hour for this special Christmas edition. We have a few special features for you, like this one from Mark Oppold.
Hi, I'm farm broadcaster Mark Oppold. I wrote this poem, Christmas on the Farm, for a radio program back in December of 1994. I pull it out once a year at this time and look forward to sharing with you again today. Christmas on the Farm. The chores are almost done. The work isn't as hard today. In fact, it's almost fun. The barn windows are frosted over, but the heat lamps are on inside. The last sow farrowed late last night. Thank God she's still alive. Here comes my neighbor on his old John Deere. He's returning my wagon he's had almost a year. He's worked hard this year to keep two farms afloat. He's one of those farmers who never loses hope. I can see his stock cows out by the pond. They seem to know there's something special going on. In fact, all the animals are acting different in a way. Do you suppose they know it's Jesus' birthday today? The neighbor has parked the wagon and has headed home again. The kids have their noses to the window wondering where I am. We have to get to church. We're all singing in the choir. Then home to open presents and to sit and rest a while. I better get inside. I'm starting to get cold. But these moments at Christmas, I give my heart to hold. The farm is where it started, in a stable long ago. Christmas on the farm. How I love it so. I'm Mark Oppold. Merry Christmas.
And more cowboy poetry from our livestock reporter and genuine cowboy, Will Jordan.
In today's livestock news, thank you for joining us this Christmas morning. As a time to reflect on the year, on our blessings, and on our family, I'd like to share a poem with you. I hope you enjoy. The Night Before a Cow's Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all across the farm, all the creatures were stirring, even those in the barn. Obese sleeves, like stockings, were hung on the squeeze chute with care, in hopes that Santa Gertrudis, the jolly bovine, soon would be there. The goats hoped for coats to beat the winter cold. The pigs wished for figs to snack on fivefold. The mice hoped for peace. The barn cats wished for a feast. The sheep hoped for new lambing jugs to flaunt, which then begs the question, what would the cows want? Might it be a summer vacation, a trip to the beach that exceeds expectation? Maybe an AI technician with smaller arms, or a fancy new cow scratcher installed on the farm. Could it be a fresh bale, not covered in snow, or possibly range cubes, an extra bag or so? After checking his list, even checking it twice, Santa Gertrudis will make his famed trip Christmas night. What's on a cow's wish list, we may never know, yet time spent with loved ones is better than any gift with a bow. As Christmas candles burn around your home, lifting scents of sugar cookies, candy canes, and the like, please enjoy Niche Air Freshening. I find air fresheners intriguing. The scents available are the plethora of cobblers and pies that your mother or grandmother makes, then other more abstract scents. You might find breezy sand dunes, aged sap-dripping conifer, or simply cotton. While the available scents are okay, an incredible niche business would be making candles for cowmen. One of those lucrative smells might be Sale Day, a rich aromatic blend of dirt and cow manure that, when lit, makes you believe that you could almost hear an auctioneer's chant. Another scent might be Shaps, providing the savory fragrance of a saddle shop as if you were about to try on a brand new pair of leggings or pick up a new set of 8-foot split reins. Some scents would be pretty self-explanatory, such as Alfalfa or Fresh Cut Hay, or maybe Feed Yard. You could experience the copious smell of 30,000 head of fat cattle standing in your kitchen. The diehard cow folks might be interested in Calving Shed, a perfumed mix of placenta, milk, and cud. Those that prefer the beef separated from the bovine would likely find End of the Trail to be their mouth-watering favorite, as it released the smell of a ribeye on the grill. I believe the bestseller, though, might be a candle simply called Life, a comprehensive, layered candle that begins with Calving Shed before progressing through Sale Day, then Feed Yard, before finally burning with End of the Trail. Throughout history, farmers and ranchers have played what some might call the most important role, feeding the world. While engaged in producing the food and fiber that feeds and clothes the world, agriculturalists have a front row seat to the wonder of creation, experience rich mercies each day. Whether sowing seed or putting out feed, tending cows or pulling a plow, the choice to be involved in agriculture and steward our natural resources is most noble. It was no mistake that shepherds were the first to receive the news of the Savior's birth. They knew the value of listening and observing their flocks, attentive to the needs of those in their charge. If you joined us this Christmas morning, I'd like to say thank you and Merry Christmas. For AgNet West, I'm Will Jordan.
While we're thinking about all the animals around the farm, that includes our pets. And Gary Crawford tells us that this time of year, there are more foods out that can cause problems for some of them.
While you are hosting a holiday party or meal, your dog or cat may be prowling around there saying,
all I want for Christmas is food.
food, yeah, but a lot of party foods can be dangerous to your pet, and not just chocolate. Kansas State University veterinarian Dr. Susan Nelson says you'd be surprised at the list of foods and food ingredients that can be toxic to dogs, cats, or both. For example, foods that contain the sugar-free sweetener xylitol.
It causes low blood sugar and liver failure.
And it doesn't take much to do irreparable harm.
And people don't think about it because it can be in baked goods. It can be in our sugar-free candies. It can also be in some of our medications, things like that as well.
It's in many sugar-free chewing gums also. And in fact, she's had cases where dogs have gone into the room where partygoers have put their coats and purses and such, gotten into those coats and purses, started eating the chewing gum and died from it. And this xylitol thing is mostly a problem for dogs. Also, especially for dogs, the fatty parts of meats can be a problem.
All those fatty parts can cause what we call pancreatitis, which can become life-threatening for them as well. And then some of our gravies and things like that are made with onion powder, which is a lot more concentrated than just plain onion. And they can have garlic powder and things in them as well. And so for both cats and dogs, that can also be an issue as far as causing a type of anemia that they can get.
But the list is longer. There are more foods that can cause problems for pets. Do you put out nuts like macadamias, almonds, walnuts, pecans? Those can cause all kinds of gastrointestinal problems, from just making the dog throw up to conditions that could really be dangerous and result in some very expensive surgery.
And then raisins, which are going to be in a lot of the holiday foods, and grapes, can be toxic to dogs.
And if you're baking things using raw bread dough?
That can cause serious problems for dogs if they ingest a raw bread dough as well.
Quite a list there. Now, you may think that Dr. Nelson's list of bad foods for dogs and cats goes a little far. Maybe she's just a worrywart or an alarmist, but she says she has seen and treated these exact problems.
Oh, yeah, and I was out in private practice for 13 years as well, so, yep.
So Dr. Nelson's advice to party hosts, do your best to keep your party foods out of the reach of your pets, or keep the pets out of reach of the foods. And also, if the pets are running around during the party or the meal, ask your guests, please don't feed them.
It will just encourage begging behavior, and you don't know what they might be feeding them. And there again, some of these can be more problematic than others, depending on what pieces they're slipping them.
Or if the pets rule the house, maybe let the pets eat their food, have the guests beg for food from the pets. How about that, huh?
That would be another way to do it.
And not a good way, though, right, Dougie? All right.
All I want for Christmas is food.
Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up in a few moments, we'll have today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news. And with today's AgNet West headlines, here's AgNet West Farm News Director, Brian German.
A coalition representing a diverse group of interests has sent a letter to Governor Gavin Newsom and state legislators highlighting supply chain challenges within the state. The groups expressed concerns about current supply chain issues exacerbated by pending and proposed state policies affecting freight, imports, and exports. The letter emphasizes that ill-supported regulations without adequate infrastructure and flexibility will lead to severe consequences, including higher prices, job losses, and economic hardships. The letter specifically requests an immediate meeting with Governor Newsom to discuss the tangible impacts of state policies attempting to rapidly change how businesses operate without the necessary technology or supporting infrastructure. The coalition seeks to collaborate with the administration on regulatory relief and necessary investments to find mutually beneficial solutions to enhance the state's economy while also addressing environmental concerns. U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack has formalized a partnership with Agriculture Future of America by signing a Memorandum of Understanding. The collaboration aims to strengthen the future competitiveness and sustainability of the U.S. agriculture industry by preparing more young individuals for careers in agriculture. The MOU solidifies USDA's commitment to supporting AFA's leadership development and education mission with a focus on federal sector employment. The partnership involves ongoing collaboration on leadership development initiatives and connecting young leaders with career opportunities in food, agricultural science, and natural resources. Under the MOU, USDA pledges to facilitate AFA delegates' participation in its programs, including internships, while AFA will provide occasion for USDA to engage with its delegates. 62 organizations have penned a letter to President Joe Biden expressing concern about potential jeopardy to progress on the implementation of the Packers and Stockyards Act rulemakings. President Biden's executive order on competition directed the U.S. Department of Agriculture to fortify the act by issuing new rules aimed at safeguarding farmers and ranchers from concentrated monopoly power in the livestock industry. While supporting the recently finalized rule on transparency in poultry growing contracts, the organizations highlight that crucial aspects of strengthening the act are still pending. The groups assert that delays pose a risk to the rules until they are finalized. The letter urges swift action to restore the act to ensure the prosperity of farmers and ranchers. Despite praising the administration's efforts to combat monopoly power and enforce antitrust laws, the organizations emphasize the urgency of finalizing robust rules to protect against industry abuses. While citrus prices are trending positively, production costs remain a significant challenge. CEO and owner of Fruit World, Bianca Caprellian, said it's been a tough year.
For our family farms and for our growers, you know, I'd say that kind of overall everyone's feeling very pinched, and everything tends to roll back to the growers. So, you know, they're the ones that get squeezed the most. So it's been a tough year. Luckily, pricing has kind of been high enough to counteract most of it. But I've been saying for a while that this was going to be a tough year. Next year and maybe even the year after will be tough. And, you know, as long as we can all make it through that, I think there'll be some good years ahead. But we're definitely in a bit of a tougher time. The citrus crop this season in California is down quite substantially. And, you know, with inflation, the costs are so high. And you look at the price that we're getting for the product, and it's getting to be hard to pencil out.
The World Agritech Innovation Summit is returning to San Francisco in 2024. The summit is the annual meeting place for the global ag tech ecosystem, where agri-food businesses, investors, and tech pioneers gather to exchange insights, be inspired, and identify future partners. Celebrating its 12th year, the 2024 summit is scheduled for March 19th and 20th at the Marriott Marquis in San Francisco and will be complemented by an interactive virtual platform for networking and content. Some of the program themes that will be highlighted during the event include automation, digital financing in agriculture, future-proofing food systems, biologicals, and CRISPR cultivation. Speakers include representatives from CDFA, Microsoft, UC Davis, and the International Fresh Produce Association. More information about the summit is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
On one particular type of farm, Christmas Day can be an extra special day, unlike all others. That's coming up on This Land of Ours.
Most farmers harvest their crops once a year, some three or four times a year, but for a few producers, it's nonstop.
We grow year-round.
And harvest year-round. That's Megan Klotzbach. She's with Mother Earth Organic Mushrooms, a fungus farm in Pennsylvania. Now, of course, mushrooms are generally grown in buildings in the dark. They grow very fast. They can double their size overnight in some cases. And so, by necessity,
we harvest every day except for Christmas Day. We give them a break.
What happens to those poor little guys on Christmas Day? Nobody comes to get them.
Well, our growers still come in and check on them. We change the temperature a little bit to slow the growth so that we're not growing too fast that day. But, you know, it's definitely not ideal for them, but it gives our harvesters the day off.
Which I guess they desperately need. So for mushroom growers, Christmas Day is still a work day, but the big job of cutting the mushrooms, processing them, is put on hold for that one special day of the year. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
This is the AgNet News Hour. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back. For today's featured interview, I'm joined by fellow farm broadcaster and my husband, Rusty Halverson, as we head pretty far north to talk with the head reindeer ranchers. And no, it's not Santa. It's father and son ranchers, Vern and Kyle Hosselton of Drayton, North Dakota. They welcomed us onto the family ranch to learn all about their reindeer.
Well, first off, thanks for having us out. Appreciate it. Let's start where I was introduced to a reindeer in person at the Ralt Farm in Fargo. And Sabrina works over there, a seasonal job. And that was the first time I'd seen reindeer. And they had told me that there's not going to be antlers because it wasn't the right time of year. We're visiting at the right time of year, and you've got all sorts of critters with antlers out there. First off, how many reindeer do you have? Boys, girls, moms, little kids. What do you got right now?
Two babies that are 3 months old. Two female mothers, 2.5 years old, roughly. One bull that is 2 years old that just is now in, just showing up this spring. One bull that is six or seven. It's been on the farm, born on the farm. And then one steer that is about the same age.
So I want to get into the backstory a little bit, because we talk with farmers, Rusty and I do all the time. And we talk with people, you know, who grow crops. We talk to people who have livestock like cows, but having a reindeer ranch is pretty unique. So maybe Vern can answer, how did this get started? How did being reindeer ranchers start in your family?
Well, we started out with buffalo we raised for 10 years, and we didn't have enough land or what we had on our property right now to handle a decent sized herd of buffalo. So we sold them all out, and my wife asked me, what do you want to go into next? And reindeer came out of my mouth. And my wife did a lot of research and trying to figure things out. And we talked to the state vet and everything, and they finally, it wound up 5 years later, after we got rid of the buffalo, that we were able to get reindeer. The state vet finally allowed reindeer into the state, and we picked up two females from the party at Bismarck that just moved into the state, and then we picked up one female, all spring calves, from Plainwood, Montana.
Let me ask you this. You were asked what you wanted to raise next. You said reindeer came out of your mouth. How did that happen? Did it just pop into your head, and all of a sudden that's what you wanted?
Basically, you say that. You just, it came out of my mouth, and there was no question about it. That's what was coming.
Well, I was wondering marketability, going from bison because of space down to reindeer. How can you make a profit? How can you make a buck, hopefully, by owning reindeer?
Reindeer keeps you busy through Christmas season. And also, if you've got a herd big enough, you can sell some. You can make pretty good in that aspect also.
So the reindeer that you have, from what I understand, you guys mostly go during Christmas season and show them as reindeer, as of course we all know reindeer are Santa's helpers. So that's your season, and that's what your reindeer ranch is for. You don't sell them for meat or anything like that?
No. I'm still small enough yet, and I don't know if I get big enough I'd ever would sell any for meat.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the next generation of reindeer ranchers here, well, I think we'll start with... So Kyle, how did you get involved, and is this something that you've wanted to do, reindeer ranching?
Well, they go off as a story. Technically, I was the last one out of the four of us to get asked. So as the number one and the good son of the family, I agreed and just kind of ran with it. 20 years plus now later, yes, I'm hoping my end goal is for now my boys to take over here in the yard in Drayton, about 100 head. I am wanting and have friends, a friend in Texas that is interested in doing it down there as well, which there my goal is to have more acreage, you know, instead of our 17 acres here in the yard up here in Drayton. If I'm with Texas, I'm looking for 1,015 acreage, and I want to do 1,000 head down there besides, and then travel. The friend of mine that is in Texas, he wants to do a building size of Super Walmart.
Oh.
And then have people come to the yard year-round, plus traveling during the Christmas time when we follow the jolly one, you can say.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Has anybody else tried something similar to that? Microphone up.
not that I know of. There probably is somebody around the states that's doing something like that. Years ago, I've known of one person that was that time was going all over the United States and traveling all over with them, running semis. There again, I think it's a lot more paperwork, a lot more. You got to have all your P's and Q's and your health certificates and everything else in line. I look at it as you get down to one state, and there again, you have somebody come to them or go out with us. It's less paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're talking about Texas, and then we are currently, we're visiting with you at your ranch in Drayton, North Dakota. We're about an hour from Canada, so we're really far north here in the nation. So you've got two very different regions that you will be ranching reindeer in. What kind of weather do reindeer like, and what does it take to raise reindeer as far as environment and things?
All reindeer like it cold. Even here, they'll sit on the snowbank until it's gone. It's just like us migrating to Texas. It's going to take you a minute or two to get used to the hot weather and everything else. I have talked to this gentleman, my buddy, and we have looked at doing everything in concrete and fans and trying to keep the building as cool as we can to keep the animal as happy as we can during the hotter months.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question would be, what kind of diets do they have? Is it challenging to meet their nutritional needs, or is it...
What do they eat? Let's put it frankly, what do they eat?
Food.
Candy canes and gumdrops?
not quite. We have a 14?
No, we are different. We're getting a feed right now from Sanix Harvest States that is pellet form that has the majority of the nutrition they need, and it's also called a reindeer feed.
Oh.
And sugar beet pulp is their main diet, and we give them some alfalfa to help out, a little substitute throughout the winter. So their needs are not all that hard to take care of, and they Jan feeds them a lot of apples, carrots, bread, just for treats, to try to tame them all down so they're used to being around people and don't have any problems with them.
So reindeer is a ruminant animal. Do they chew a cud like a cow does? That kind of ruminant animal, or?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I've never seen that. Not at Santa's Village, at least.
This is the AgNet News Hour. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more of this chat on raising reindeer. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. We continue with our interview. Fellow farm broadcaster Rusty Halverson, who is also my husband, joined me for a trip to Drayton, North Dakota, to talk with father and son reindeer ranchers, Vern and Kyle Halselton. We were just out there with them, and they seemed very friendly. Do they normally have a nice temperament, or what are they like in their natural state?
Well, the majority of them here have that nice, gentle attitude majority of the time, because they, like you say, John has taken care of them nicely to calm them down. Mm-hmm. And, they're pets, not pests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're a nice animal to deal with majority of the time.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, just like other animals, when you have to do something they don't want you to do, like my cat.
If you got to give them some shots or something like that, yeah, they're going to resist you at full benefit. That's it.
Well, we're just, we're at that time of year where you say the rut's going to be coming up pretty soon. And management considerations, you've got to keep them separated, depending on who wants to be with who and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're keeping everybody separated so we don't have, how you put this politely?
Accidents.
There you go. surprises or wrong genetics tied with the wrong, we don't want anybody coming out backwards.
Yeah.
Reindeer, the more white they are, the more inbred they are.
Okay.
I'm trying to keep away from that as much as possible. And then there again, I'm trying to keep, if I had two bulls in the same pen, neither one would survive because they'd be beating each other until they're both not living. And there are people have learned the hard way. We try to separate my bulls and cows or heifers, like my steer. I try to keep him away as well with the new fawns. My fawns can breed at 6 months old, but I still would rather not.
Let's talk about their antlers a bit. We're recording this in August, and they're gigantic and they're beautiful, and they still have velvet on them, and they're very soft. And then later in the year, they will shed these, and we'll be posting this interview up in December because that's the appropriate time for reindeer, right? So will that be about the time that they lose their antlers? I'm not even sure what the correct terminology is here, so.
It depends on your males. After they're done breeding everything, they'll settle down, and they will lose their antlers before the females will. A female, if she's pregnant, may keep her antlers until she has the calf or just before she has the calf. If she's not pregnant, she was going to drop theirs real early.
And that's another thing to point out, too, that the females actually do have antlers, whereas in other, you know, deer
do not,
right?
Okay, so for the antlers after they shed them, when you, I would guess, you've shown us some outside, you collect them, keep them. Is there any kind of, do folks want to buy reindeer antlers?
It's been a while since I had somebody in the yard, a couple years probably, give or take. Yes, last I heard was it's $12 a pound, and, you know, a lot of them, they use it for whatever. I mean, they are hard.
I'd say the difference between a horn, which is hollow in the middle, and antler is solid all the way through. So they are beautiful material for the art people that love to carve on them and shape them, whatever they want. I know I've had pens made out of them, and there's anything, jewelry and everything else have been made out of them.
And they're like a bone, right?
Yeah, just they're solid all the way through a bone, and they are hard.
So what would you say, I'm going to ask you, this is a two-part question, and it's for both of you. What have been some of the challenges, some of the bigger challenges you have faced as reindeer ranchers? But then also, what do you get the most joy from for being reindeer ranchers?
Weather.
Okay.
Traveling and weather, yeah, no, terrible.
Yeah, because you're hauling reindeer probably in a horse trailer, I would assume, something to the effect.
In a stock trailer.
Stock trailer.
In a stock trailer. And we are, as of this year for 21, we are as far as Williston from Drayton, down to Milbank, South Dakota, and in the Minnesota, getting into Fergus Falls.
Mm-hmm. And this is in winter.
In the winter, where it's nice, beautiful, never snows, the wind doesn't blow, it's gorgeous outside, 70 degrees. Yeah, beautiful outside, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, North Dakota winter. All right, weather is a challenge.
So what offsets that? What keeps you happy about it?
I always say the youngest person I had out was only 105, and she enjoyed them just as much as a two-year-old was.
Mm. Everybody likes reindeer.
They say it's the first time they've seen them in their lifetime and everything, and they're a very unique little animal.
And that is one, for people that are seeing it for the first time, do they say, wow, I thought they'd be bigger, or wow, look at the size of their feet? What surprises people the most? Because it struck me, their feet is like pretty wide, so they can walk in snow, get around there. And a smaller body, I would imagine, is more efficient, especially in cold climates. Would that be right? Maybe?
I don't want to answer that. Yes, the body size, where Ole is as a steer, he's a bigger animal all the way around. What people are most used to. You pull out the females, they are smaller, and everybody kind of goes, gee, they're so small. The only thing that helps them, you get into the mountains of like Norway and Sweden and up in the Alps and stuff, there's three layers of hair in there. The middle one is a hollow hair to give you that extra insulation. Since why they're sitting on a snowbank, you know, at 60 degrees in the springtime, and we're walking around in shorts, and they're kind of sweating, so.
And they are designed, like their legs will shut down, slow down the flow of them, so to keep them just from freezing, to conserve energy.
What's the coldest weather around here that they've, you know, they've got a barn. It's not like they're out in the open and stuff like that, but what are some of the coldest temps you've seen that you've had them where doesn't seem to bother them a bit?
30 plus below zero. They're
right?
Outside. They're come run when it's feed time.
Huh.
They don't care. I mean, I do it 30 below zero. I mean, I like it cold, but 30 below zero with a negative 60 wind chill, I really don't want to go outside. But they don't care. No, then they're outside more.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Comparison to, 85 degrees in Hewitt, where they're sitting in front of the fans trying to stay cool.
Well, I think my final question would be, are you glad that it was reindeer that came out of your mouth when you were asked what you wanted to raise next?
It's been a unique challenge to keep everything going, and it is fun just to see, like I said, the people enjoy them. And I had an untouched photo one time that disappeared on me. The caption on it: reindeer really do fly. All 4 feet were off the ground, and he was running to the pasture.
Really?
is that nice to have something so fun and unique to pass down to your children too?
Probably. I mean, they are, I'm going to get their ages wrong, and I'm good at that, 11 and 9. And, you know, they're I'm trying to get them more into it. Where when I started, I was sophomore in high school, junior. They were able to pass down a lot more information that what we have done wrong. Mm-hmm. What you do not do. Mm-hmm. And now as things have gotten better, tool-wise, equipment-wise, everything else, we're able to help them, you know, grow this herd like I want to, and to be able to come out with a good, outstanding herd in for the state.
Thank you once again to Vern and Kyle. This is the AgNet News Hour, and we will return in just a moment. Welcome back to this special Christmas edition of the AgNet News Hour. To wrap up our show today, farm broadcaster Gary Truitt shares his story, The Season of Silence Light, for Christmas.
The Christmas season is often referred to as the Season of Light. While the original designation was more spiritual than literal, today most people take that phrase literally and decorate with lights. Lights on our trees, in our houses, in our stores, in our streets. They start showing up in November and hang around till January. Throughout history, people have celebrated this time of year with light, although the kind of light has changed over the centuries. Most of the light we use today is only a little over 100 years old. Incandescent light was first invented in 1879. Fluorescent lights made their debut in 1901, and a few years later, neon lights showed up at a car dealership in California. The halogen and LED lights was invented during most of our lifetimes. But prior to these inventions, it was fire that provided most of the light in our world. Archaeologists estimate that humans first discovered fire about 2 million years ago. There is evidence that about 300,000 years ago, man figured out how to use fire to not only provide light, but heat, and to make things like pottery and tools. For the next few millennia, wood, wax, oil, and other combustibles provided the fuel for fire, until 1790, when gas lights were first used in London, and over the next 100 years, gas light became the dominant source of light in our streets and in our homes. The light we use today is much different than the light used by our ancestors for centuries. In fact, it was firelight that was likely at that stable in Bethlehem. Firelight is natural, it's spiritual, it's emotional. Something that can't be achieved from the bright, glaring, and never-changing light source provided by electricity. Now, I am not suggesting that we go off the grid and go back to using candles and bonfire, but perhaps a little more candlelight in this year's holiday celebration might be in order. Our modern light sources are often accompanied by sound. From holiday carols on the radio to the babble of voices at family gatherings, cell phone ringtones, and the beeping of scanners at the grocery store, Christmas can really be a very noisy season. This year, the cacophony seems even worse, with political arguments, debates over masks, pandemic numbers, and more. If there was ever a year we needed a bit more peace and quiet, it's 2020. So let me suggest that this week you take a few minutes and turn off the noise, turn off the lights, and light a candle. Now, if you're lucky enough to live on a farm or in a rural area far from the lights and the traffic and the noise of the city, you can take your candle outside under a clear, star-filled sky. Contemplate the flickering light, listen to the silence, and consider this season and what it means to your life and to our world. Perhaps this Christmas you want to sing Joy to the World one less time and replace it with the less popular carol, Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silent.
Let all mortal flesh keep silent.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you to all of you for sharing your Christmas morning with us. I'm Sabrina Halverson from all of us at AgNet West and the AgNet NewsHour. Have a Merry Christmas.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media, at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet NewsHour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.